Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's another great day to be here, isn't it? And I thought I had a few more minutes. I was going to get another song. I had to wake up real quick. Need to go wash my face. He just brought me up here. You know, brethren, most what everyone really wants when it all comes down, all the pursuits that we see, people doing this, that, whether it's income, whether it's recreation, it all comes down to people want to be happy. The magazine Vertical Thought, most of you may have seen it. You know, it's got the yellow happy face on the front. I was going to bring it. I couldn't find it. I think that wicked woman of mine threw it away. No, I don't think she did, but it just disappeared. It vanished. Well, they had an article in there about the pursuit of happiness. It's geared more to the young people, but I'm young in the mind. So I thought it was pretty good. But that's what people really want, is happiness. That's what everyone would love to be, just to be happy. And it's amazing how many things people can find to be unhappy about. To just be unhappy about. A few weeks ago, we were working near a pond, and I drove up, you know, there's a nice pond, cattails and things, and over here. And first thing one of the guys said to me, he said, "I wish that blankety blank frog would shut up." I thought frogs were, you know, croaking frog was kind of soothing. But to some people, that's an irritant. That frog just croak, 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 on and on. And I remember years ago, we had a foreman, and he was from out in eastern Oklahoma. And in his lunch, he'd bring these possum grapes. And that was just great. He said, "I really appreciate this. You know, they're just growing, and I have these possum grapes." And he thought it was the greatest news. You know, I was a real young guy then. The other guy there by me said, "That guy, I wouldn't eat those things." You know, one man thinks it was great. It made him happy, and someone else just could not understand that. You know, one person loves the singing of birds. Okay, you asked for it. We're there in bed this morning. We didn't turn on the air conditioning last night. Hey, we wasn't turning it on till a certain day. I don't care what happens. I said, "Well, we can turn it on. Brand new unit. Haven't ever used it." I said, "But if we let the house cool off overnight, then it don't have to cool it down." Well, can you imagine my wife's there? The windows are open. And these birds just sing, 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 sing. And this morning I said, "Man, that is great. God's creatures just singing here." And she said, "That bird is a demon." So, said, "That thing's been singing all night." So, you know, one person, it's, you know, happiness is there. And many times it's just how you look at something. You know, it seems like happiness is what we make it. Many times, happiness is just what we make it. And this article in Vertical Thought, its point was, happiness depends on us. That's who it depends on. It depends on us. And they had several points there. One was choosing the right thoughts. You know, everything begins in the head. And choosing the right thoughts is a key to happiness. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, it 2 Corinthians chapter 10. In verse 5, says, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. And I think that's a real key to happiness, is every thought to the obedience of Christ. And in one of the Proverbs, it says, as he thinks in his heart, so is he. You know, it starts in the way we think. In Proverbs chapter 17, I'd like to read in verse 22. Proverbs chapter 17 in verse 22. Says, a merry heart does good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drives the bones. In my margin it says, it makes medicine even better. You know, a happy type personality, it's even going to help the medicine even better. You know, it's going to promote healing. A happy heart, a merry heart does good like a medicine. In Philippians chapter 4, in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8, it says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are good, report. If there is any virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. We are bombarded with so much negative through the news. You know, the news will just it'll put you in a bad attitude for the day. We get up in the morning, Laura's fixing breakfast, turns on TV on Channel 9 News. And time that thing's through with me, I've about had it, you know. And, you know, it's just, of course, and that's pretty uplifting that early in the morning, but news can really drag you down if you let your thoughts begin to dwell on such negative things. You know, of course, I have my attitudes. One of mine is the wind in Oklahoma. I've got an attitude about that. I don't like it. I've lived here all my life, and I still don't like it. It just blows, and my wife says, well, think about the good it does. You know, it blows away the smoke and the pollution and you know, and I'm still griping. She said, well, you just need to move away. But she's kind of thinking, and leave me here. Just move away, you know. Sometimes we just let things just make us unhappy. It shouldn't be affecting us to that point, to just drive us to unhappiness, just dwelling on, oh, there's that wind again. Man, you know, you try to have a picnic, and there goes the stuff, and, you know, finally you just can get in an attitude. Well, we can't let our happiness depend on calm days. And, of course, another point is that the right words promote happiness. In the Bible study this morning, Mr. Weber brought out the point that negativism, it just begets more and more negativism. You know, you're unhappy and you start expressing it. Pretty soon everyone around you is unhappy and it spreads. And, of course, the other way, too, is the right word promotes happiness. There's a man I meet almost every morning. Sometimes I'll say, well, Lee, how you doing? He'll say, great, you know, doing great. And I thought, man, I think I'll try that. And I think it works. Some, you know, they'll ask me, well, Gerald, how's it going? I'll say, man, couldn't be any better unless my wife was here with me. They kind of look at me. I don't tell them, though, that she slapped me away from the table that morning. No, I meant it. You know, it's just, hey, it's spread. You can't, some things just sometimes don't get any better, you think. You know, you can promote a happy attitude with words. I thought it was a very good point. In Colossians chapter 3, in Colossians chapter 3, verse 17, it says, whatever you do in word or in deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. We remember our words, you know, we're examples. It says to do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus. The word is so important. In James chapter 3, we know James has had a lot to say about the words. In James chapter 3 and verse 2. James 3 verse 2. For if we all stumble in many things, if anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Our words, if we control the words. How many times have we said words that have just spread a bad attitude and hurt ourselves and everyone around them? It just happens all the time. It's part of our nature. It's part of that Mr. Hudson was talking about. We take this time to think about it. We can't just think about it. We have to start overcoming and practicing. And words is one of the things that everyone could surely practice with, is what comes out of our mouth. You know, if you don't stumble in your word, you're a perfect man. Proverbs chapter 15. Proverbs chapter 15. I've had to read this many times in my life. It says in verse 1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. See, a soft answer, it kind of throws water on the fire. But a harsh answer, then you have two people mad instead of one. You're mad, and you give a harsh answer, or then you have two people, or even two madder people than they were before. In other words, it's spread. That soft answer can slow it down and start cooling it off. And of course, in our life, our actions have so much to do with our happiness. What we actually do. We can think, we can talk, but as you've heard, actions speak louder than words. What we really do, the example we set, and Mr. Weber talked some about that too this morning, about Ruth and Naomi, the example they set, and Boaz, the example, and that he knew Ruth before he ever met her because of the reputation, because of the example she had set in her life. You know, right action at the right time is so important. It's a matter of timing in what we do. Of course, I'd like to read it in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. There's even been a song I don't remember who it was or a number of years ago about this, but Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 7, it says, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak. You know, if we could ever get that down perfect, the right time to say the right word, the right time to do something. This whole chapter here, the beginning, is, you know, it's a time to be born and time to die. It's a time to plant. You know, you decide, I'm going to plant a garden. It's, you know, it's December, but I want to plant now. Well, go ahead. Then you can replant in April. You know, there's a time, and our actions, these are just examples about how our actions need to be timed. You know, there's a time for marriage, and there's a time to be single. There's a time for the things that God approves of. You know, it's what we do and when we do it. In Romans chapter 2, verse 13. Romans chapter 2, verse 13. For not the hearers of the law are just in the sight of God, but the doers of the law will be justified. It's what we do. Over and over, the example is what we do. We can hear, we can study, we can pray, we can do all these things, and it comes down to what we're doing. What we're doing, what we're saying. And, of course, in Proverbs chapter 29, it says, happy is the man that does them. Well, I probably should read that. Proverbs chapter 29, and verse 18. Says, where there is no revelation or vision, the people cast off restraint, but happy is he who keeps the law. You see, people without vision, without what Mr. Hudson call it, seeing the 30,000 feet, you know, they just cast off restraint. Well, who cares? Do what feels good. And we're in that world right now that's casting off restraint. Anyway, here in the Western world more. Casting off restraint. And people are convinced that that's going to make them happy. Well, if I just can cast this off. You've heard people say, oh man, it's such a load not to, I don't think they'd say obey God, but not to live under God's law. And not have to do the Sabbath or the holy days. And it's so great to cast off restraint. No, that's not what brings happiness. But happy is he who keeps the law. That's one of the keys to the happiness, is keeping the law and obeying God in everyday life. And in Proverbs chapter 14, Proverbs 14 and verse 21. Proverbs 14:21. He who despises his neighbor sins, but he who has mercy on the poor, happy is he. That's another action, is to have mercy on the poor. As Boaz did to Ruth and Naomi. He had mercy on the poor. But, of course, my wife, she was seeing the other way. She said, yeah, well, he sees a new young wife. Was it all that? Yeah, I shouldn't even have said that, should I? She's got a devious mind, I tell you. No, but he was there. It was his responsibility, and he was taking it. And that was the point. one of the points there in the Bible study was he was a man of integrity, and he opened his heart to the poor. And I know people say, well, you're enabling the poor and you're doing this and that. But God says to, well, when it's, you have the opportunity, when it's your time, when there's something you can do that you should, he said, because that's going to make you happy. And people that do that, I'm convinced, do get happiness out of it. By helping someone brings happiness. He who has mercy on the poor is one of the keys to happiness. And of course, we all like to serve and you know, do this and do that for people. But Jesus gave us a little instruction about that, because in our human nature, we're going to serve so we can be served. We scratch your back and you'll scratch mine, which is not really serving. I might look at Luke chapter 14 and verse 13. Luke chapter 14 and verse 13. Jesus said, but when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind. I mean, what could any of these people do for you after you give them a feast? Are you going to get anything? Nothing but a grocery bill. And you will be blessed because they cannot repay you, for you shall be repaid at the resurrection of the just. That's another point to keep in mind in being happy. We say, well, man, we've served God all these years and I've did that and what? Where's the payback? Well, sometimes it's at the resurrection of the just. May not be tomorrow. It may not ever be in this life. But God, generally speaking, you will be blessed if you're helping those that cannot help themselves. Another thing to remember is don't let other things determine your happiness. Other things, people spend miserable lives because this happens. They did that to me. I missed out on so-and-so. My parents weren't what they should have been. And other things are just manipulating people's happiness. They're just, all the things around them is manipulating their happiness. In that article in the Vertical Thought, it called that determinism. And growing up on a farm, I remember, you know, it's no rain, it's dry, everything's burning up. And then it'd start raining, it'd rain and rain and rain. Oh, there's mildew, there's rust. You know, he just keeps you toward from one thing to another. No, if you let other things determine your happiness, there's not going to be much happiness. The one thing that they called it genetic determinism. Blames our ancestry. Well, I've done that. You know, I threw a big anger fit. My dad's name was Harry, and my wife says, okay, Harry. Okay, you know, you're just like your dad, Harry. And, well, it's in the genes. I can't help it. Man, it's genetic. And so it's just, you know, it just destroys your happiness. Genetic determinism. Oh, I can't be happy because it's in the genes. It's not there, so I can't do it. Another thing they call it psychological determinism. Blames our parents for our lack of happiness because they failed to praise us enough. Well, I can identify with that. I believe in praise. I think it's a great thing. Mr. Armstrong, in his autobiography, credits, I think, his first employer, his praising him, which just fired him up and got him going on the enthusiastic route that he was. So I don't want to take away from praise. But we're in a praise-addicted society here in the United States now. It's praise, praise. Can't do, well, you didn't get enough praise. So, I guess in Florida, at least one school, now they're not using A, B, C, D, F, failure. That's not happening. There is no failure. You're graded 1, 2, 3. Number one's the least. Then number two, I don't know what is, but three covers like from what we'd call a C through an A. In other words, there's nothing there. Everyone is doing great. There's no failure. Just 1, 2, 3. We don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And of course, everybody gets a trophy. Go out and I've been to the little leagues and. Maybe there's a good reason for it, but everybody gets a trophy. You know, it's praise, praise, praise. If I don't get any praise, I can't be happy. Apparently in some schools, there's no honoring the valedictorians. They've done away with that because that might be offensive to those who are failures. I can identify with the failure part, but I still have to find a way to be happy. You know, if you just become addicted to praise, in other words, if your happiness, what I'm trying to say, is going to depend on people praising you, it's going to be pretty shallow. And it's not going to be that real. You can't just let those kind of things determine your happiness. You know, of course, then there was environmental determinism. And, of course, this blames someone or something in our surroundings. I can't be happy where I live. I can't be happy in Oklahoma because the wind blows 360 days a year. I mean, how can I be happy here? I can't picnic. I can't boat. I can't fish. I'm just in a miserable state. Because of my environment. Of course, our teachers, they ruined my life. I had one in the fourth and fifth grade, and I blamed that poor man for everything that's happened to me. He was up in years, he could not control the class, and I was the type of guy that would just take advantage of that. And he couldn't control the class. You know, other students went through there and did fine. But your teacher, the boss is, you know, I can't be happy under this guy. And there's times, I'm not saying there's times that we don't need to move. There are times. Economic situations, how can you be happy, you know, if you're not making, what was Mr. Weber called it today, I end up in life not where I thought I'd be, something like that. I forget just how he put it. And so, you know, I'm just down. I'm not where I thought I should be. I can't be happy. It could go on and on. National policy, any number of things could keep us from being happy. But we can't let the environment dominate our happiness. If it does, there's always something in the environment it's not going to be what it should be. You know, we plan something and the environment takes it away. Sometimes we have to get out of the environment. I admit that. There's some places that, you know, we just can't. There's just so much negative there that, hey, we've got to figure out a way to get out of this. I'm not saying that you can just be happy. I mean, if you're in a concentration camp, that's going to be pretty hard to be happy. When you're starving and being beaten, what was it, Mr. Hudson said, the beatings will cease when the morale improves, or I think that's what his dad would tell him. The beatings will cease when morale improves. Well, it's hard to be happy that way. You know, if you're in that situation, sometimes you need to do your best to exit that. And, of course, God is there to help us. But if we can't change a situation we're in, we can't let that destroy our happiness. We can't just sit there and be miserable. In Luke chapter 3 and verse 14, likewise the soldiers asked him, saying, "What shall we do?" So he said to them, "Do not intimidate anyone or accuse falsely, and be content with your wages." Has anyone ever been content with their wages? Maybe some have. But here was a situation, what could they do? I mean, they're conscripted, there's nothing they could do. And he said, be content. When you cannot change something, then life, I think, does demand that we be content, or we're surely not going to be happy. And, you know, Paul said what he learned, that whatever state he was in, that he would be content. He would do his best to be content. You know, he said if we have food and clothing, that we should try to be content. Because if we don't have all the things we think we need, we can't let that destroy our happiness. You know, he said, as with such things as you have, you know, learn to be content. Of course, he's not saying you should not improve if you can, but in the process of improving, find happiness by not allowing things to just manipulate our life into negative unhappiness through what days we have on this earth. You know what? All the things that we have to deal with every day, it only increases or decreases the challenge of being happy. We can't just let it dominate the happiness. Yeah, we have more challenges on certain days. Some people have more challenges than others. You know, Jesus said life doesn't consist of the abundance of things. And when we live in the United States with the television shows, everybody lives in these fabulous, huge houses and drives nice cars. And we can be focused on that and just be impossible to be happy. I can't be happy. I don't have this. I don't have that. But we can't let that determine it. We can't continue to just be dominated by that. I had another page here somewhere. It's my last page. That's all there is in the book. But you know, when we get back to our life here in the church, you know, happiness thrives on the future. And is there anyone that has more knowledge of the future than we have? You know, it's like when you're planning a vacation or planning for the feast. It's a lot of fun, the planning and thinking ahead and preparing for that. And, you know, God has called us to a great future. And we should be thinking about that. That would add a lot of happiness to a miserable day. He's planned a beautiful future for us. In Proverbs chapter 23, I want to read that. In Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 18, it says, "For surely there is a hereafter, and your hope will not be cut off." When things are really caving in, we need to always remember that there is a hereafter, And your hope will not be cut off in the end. It's going to be there. In Luke chapter 6, in verse 22 and verse 23, blessed are you when men hate you. And there's times when God's religion will cause people to hate us. And that doesn't bring a lot of happiness. But Jesus said, blessed are you when men hate you and when they exclude you and revile you and cast your name as evil. For the Son of Man's sake, rejoice in that day and leap for joy. For indeed your reward is great in heaven. For in like manner their fathers did to the prophets. So sometimes we're going to be faced with that. And we need to look at the positive side of it and to rejoice, as Jesus said. In Revelation chapter 21, it does seem at times things can get pretty gloomy, and at times maybe it feels like this is all we have. Revelation 21, verse 4. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. I'm thinking, if God's going to wipe away tears, and there'll be no more death or sorrow, it's pretty sure fact that that's going to be happening until He does that. And we can't let that destroy our happiness if for a time we're thrown into such a situation. But God is going to intervene, and there's going to be a time when the former things are completely passed away and a new order. So, brethren, we just need to keep our thoughts and our words, our actions in line with God. That is real keys to happiness. And, of course, we can't let other things determine whether we're going to be happy or not. You know, other things then begin to manipulate and control our lives and our happiness. Well, just stay hopeful and do the right thing.